Hey, folks, you're listening to Chew the Fat with Chef Craig Hartman down here in beautiful Charlottesville, Virginia, and the sunny and wonderful Mike Biseglia, our producer, here with us tonight. We're the podcast Chew the Fat, where you find out about food and beverage personalities. You find out what makes them tick. You find out, you know, where their passion lies and how they became successful. And hopefully we can all be inspired and sometimes even a little appalled. We are at chewfat.net. You're probably listening to us on Seville Podcast. It's the place in Charlottesville to listen to all your cool podcasts. Anything from gardening to how to make money and the history of the Civil War. So all kinds. So go there and listen to other podcasts, but don't forget to listen to us, okay? Chewfat.net. And the last interview with Chef Peter Chang, we said, could he possibly be the greatest Chinese chef that's in America today? And I said that he's going to cook us a tasting menu, multiple course tasting menu. And if someone were to shout out to us and tell us why, just why they would want to eat, Peter Chang's food, we'd pick someone to go to this tasting menu with us. So we found John Freeman, who sent a cool shout out, said he would dive off the top of the UVA Rotunda head first if there was a plate of Peter Chang's food. So he's not coming because he never said that about my food. And no, I'm just kidding. So we're picking John Freeman to come with us, and we thought we'd do it this week, but it's actually going to be the middle of August. So John, when you're listening, just so you know, I'll be giving you a call. So also tonight, we got a great interview lined up. We have a young chef who it's a little bit different from the other chefs. Now, actually, if you listen a lot, you'll find that all of the chefs are basically different from each other. And they all have different backgrounds and different passions. But this young man, I think he has a really interesting story. So we're going to find out about him. His name is Christopher Bates, and he is the chef and general manager of Hotel Fauchère in Milford, Pennsylvania, which is a Relay and Chateau. And, I'm jealous for a couple reasons. One, I was never a chef for Relay and Chateau, but I'm going to get over it because now I'm old and I'm a barbecue man. But he has been, I actually first met him at Cornell University at the hotel school. He's a graduate of the School of Hotel Administration. And since then, he's got kind of a colorful career. And we're going to hear a little bit about it. And we're going to hear about really what makes Christopher Bates tick. By the way, so very famous writers said, and I saw this quote, that he might be the top culinary mind under 30 in America today. And the only reason that is because I'm not under 30, right? Okay. So, anyway, Chris, how you doing?
Doing lovely. And yourself, Chef?
I'm doing good. I'm first of all, I'm happy to talk to you because I've always been a Chris Bates fan. That's true. I probably never told you that before.
The respect goes both ways.
But anyway, so you're up in Pennsylvania, and you're at the Hotel Fauchère. Tell us first a little bit about that hotel, maybe a little background behind the hotel.
Yeah, of course. So essentially, the hotel itself is a hotel that was built in the 1850s by a Swiss gentleman, Louis Fauchère, has quite a tie with Delmonico Restaurant in New York City. He was one of the chefs there before coming out here and built this little sort of hotel just off the last spur out of New York City. So it's always been kind of a small little tourist town. At one point, it had well over 1,000 hotel rooms.
Wow.
And has always been a huge destination for sort of the biggest personalities of New York City. So
there you are.
Gone through a couple of evolutions since then, and most recently was reopened about 5 years ago in its current incarnation, small little 16-room hotel with two restaurants.
Cool. So who owns the hotel, and what is there, are the New York City folks, or what's their background a little bit?
Two gentlemen, business partners, who settled here in Milford, both from very different sort of paths in life, and both have a huge passion for seeing sort of the restoration of the town here. So they've put a lot of time and effort and money into not only this project, but a lot of projects around the area in order to kind of see some of this boom in the economy's come back.
Yeah. Cool. So you're there in Milford, but you've been to quite a few places since you started your career, and your career's not that long yet. What do you think? How many years have you been in the kitchen?
I've been doing this for about 15 years now.
Yeah, so
seems to be getting longer quicker every day these days.
I think I'm getting older by the second. But tell us real quick about your education, and I already told them you went to the hotel school at Cornell. That's kind of a different way of becoming a chef. It's not the kind of the normal way. Let me ask you a question. Before you went to the hotel school, did you have the kitchen in mind, or what did you have in mind when you went to that famous institution?
That was a kind of a funny little mishap. I've worked in restaurants since I was like 14 or 15, and I've pretty much spent my whole life in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. Prior to that, I mean, I've cooked since I could reach the stove with my mom growing up.
Sure.
And it's just always been what I've done. Now, back in those days, you might remember, it wasn't necessarily a very well perceived career choice, but especially in small town America.
Sure.
Where it was kind of, you cooked if you
couldn't do anything else.
Yeah, if you had to go to what was that, vocational school,
right? Yeah,
if they made you go to the vocational school and you weren't good at being a mechanic, well, then you became a cook.
Yeah.
So I did a lot at that time because I really liked doing it, and then I saw it as a great opportunity to earn some money so I could buy beer and a car and do all those things that you do when you're young, and started washing dishes and bussing tables and doing all that. I ended up at Cornell because, I started looking for college options, and
sure,
I had a couple of things in mind. I always really loved math and was kind of into physics and that sort of thing, but I figured I should go to a smart school.
Sure.
But one of my buddies at the time wanted to go to Cornell, and it was an opportunity to get out of high school for a day to go visit this college. And so I went, and the recruiter that we were talking to started telling me about the culinary arts program they had there. And I was like, well, that's kind of a cool sort of two birds with one stone thing. I hear
yeah,
it's a pretty good school, and I can do what I'm enjoying doing. So off I went. I later found out it wasn't so much of a culinary arts school as
one. Hey, let me ask you a question. You just said, so off I went. You missed the whole part. First of all, you have to become accepted into Cornell's hotel school. So it's I think that defines you, because I don't think you ever thought there were any kind of obstacles to anything.
Yeah, I don't really think they had a choice. I mean...
True. I and the people that are listening, they don't know you quite yet, but they will by the end. So you had a good enough grades, and you were smart enough, and SATs, and a good enough interview and an essay to get into Cornell School of Hotel Administration.
Yeah.
What'd you write about on your essay?
To be honest, Chef,
you don't remember, do you?
I didn't even know that was a part of it.
It wasn't? That's funny.
It might have been.
I think you did. You had to write an essay. Everybody.
That was a long time ago.
Well, so here you are. You're at the hotel school, and it's, I'm sure that the recruiter for Cornell thinks that the class that people can take at the hotel school with, Chef Bob White and whatnot is a really cool culinary program. Yeah, to them, that must have been exciting. But to you, you found out later that it's not really. And you said something else earlier that, you know, you're at Cornell and the following a culinary career wasn't the top choice when it came. And I'm going to say, would that be the thing that the professors, when you told, if you got there and you said to the professors, you know, I want to be a chef, what kind of things did they say?
Probably things that are, you know, wise in hindsight, but not necessarily things I wanted to hear at that time.
Yeah, sure.
You know, I think in general, obviously, Cornell isn't a culinary school.
Right.
And, you know, everybody talked a lot about the importance of that education as opposed to a culinary education.
Mm-hmm.
And for a long time, I didn't really, I wasn't really on that train of thought, and I've spent, you know, the first couple of years being a bit disappointed. Not, you know, obviously there was some great professors there, mm-hmm. and there were some cool classes,
yeah.
But you know, I spent the first couple of years being kind of annoyed that I wasn't doing what I thought I was going to be doing,
right.
Though, you know, about halfway through, it kind of clicked that, you know, I've cooked my whole life. I didn't really need school to teach me that. That's what
right.
working's for. You know, what I needed school for was to learn how to not go out of business whether you can cook or not.
Mm-hmm. True enough. And I think, you know, one thing I was impressed by the time I was there was that the students learned more about business in that 4 years than I learned in years and years. And I was a little bit jealous about that part. But I think you took care of the cooking part. I know you graduated like 3.5 years from an Ivy League institution, worked 40 hours. You ran two or three clubs and took like 26 credits or something a semester. Am I lying?
Yeah, well, I mean, Chef, you really had me working more like 60 most of those weeks. But yeah.
Not so loud.
Well, it was the 20 that you wouldn't let me punch in for that you just told me I had to work.
Yeah, there we go. There we go. Well, what do you, you know, we're not going to stay on Cornell, but what did that that time there, how do you feel about that time now in retrospect as you look back?
You know, really, obviously very good. you know, I wish that, in a lot of ways, I wish I had the opportunity to do it again.
Mm-hmm.
In a lot of ways, I wish I had, I wish I knew then what I know now that I needed to know and I need
yeah, sure.
to know. But in general, you know, it was a pretty cool experience in terms of kind of preparing for the bigger picture. So,
yeah, true. So here you go. You graduate from Cornell, and it's not a chef school. So you go out, and what was the first thing you did when you graduated?
Oof! What is the first thing I did when I graduated? I moved back to Wyoming for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
I had worked on and off in Wyoming during school. Spent summers and a couple of winters there, and went back there as a sommelier.
You know what's funny? This is like the third chef type person that worked as a sommelier. But you were working for Aman Resorts, correct?
I was.
Yeah. And that's a pretty cool company, I think. Not the conservative style hotel company, right?
No, it's absolutely amazing. I mean, their properties around the world are probably some of the most beautiful, impressive places I've ever seen in my life.
Mm-hmm. You think, like, architecturally and design?
Architecturally, design, I mean, just from sort of a whole experience, they really, really know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. How about on the management side and then the operations of their food and beverage? Did you find that to be something you could learn from?
There was definitely something to learn from there. you know, I was also just kind of learning to work as a professional at that time, you know?
Yeah, true. True. Very true. Well, before we get into, like, the rest of your path to get where you got now, you know, I like to find out a little bit, you know, because you're definitely an overachiever. You know, probably most of the people that went to, you know, Cornell or some of the better universities are overachievers. Where did that come from? Is that your you know, I met your parents before. Where's this overachiever thing come from? They never seem like the people like me where they had their kids out like run faster, jump higher, you can kick the ball further, hit that kid harder, get him by, you know. You know, who are just like pushing their kids like that. I know that they're very intelligent and nurturing. So what do you think? Where did this this come from? This self motivation.
You know, I don't know at this point. I'm not sure if it's something that I've really discovered, but no, I mean they definitely weren't sort of pushy like that.
Yeah.
Or. You know, necessarily, really.
Yeah. So, no teachers in the past, or like
what's that?
Like when you were a kid, teachers, coaches. You didn't play? Did you play sports when you were a kid?
Yeah.
Boxing?
I did.
Did you box?
No, my big thing was skiing, actually.
Yeah.
And you know, and that was always the sport that I really cared about.
Sure.
I
yeah.
A couple of others, but ski racing was always my thing. No, you know, my parents were always really supportive growing up. Mm-hmm. They were, you know, not necessarily sort of pushing me, but always, you know, supporting me in my decision. And, you know, they're rather intelligent and, yeah, just really supportive in what I was doing.
Right.
And so it was, you know, at that time we were maybe a bit struggling, and, you know, it was kind of always, it was hard for me to see, you know, two people that were so smart, you know, kind of struggling a bit like that,
uh-huh.
And I just always wanted to be, you know, the best I possibly could. I've always been a bit competitive.
Sure.
And a bit more than a bit sometimes, but, you know, I always just want to be the best.
Yeah. Well, it's neat because, you know, you think about people who, you know, whoever it is, from Ferran Adrià, you know, you go to some of the big, you know, people like Steven Starr, you know, owns several restaurants, and they just, you know, people push themselves and, you know, what it is and where it comes from. And do you think that attribute in someone is like born in, or do you think it's something that it just happens? Like it just clicks. I know it's a hard question, but do you think people are just like born with this thing?
No, I think it comes from, you know, maybe a bit, but I think a lot of it also just comes from environment,
mm-hmm.
you know, from not being complacent and from, you know, refusing to be beaten.
Yeah. I like that. Refusing to be beaten. I never laid a hand on you when you worked for me, okay?
Not me, but a couple of, you know.
Yeah, okay. So anyway, so back to, you know, we're going to go through this career path, because I think one of the things that I've always been amazed by you is the fact that no matter what, things like good things will happen for you. So that's why I tried to invest in you several times. You wouldn't take my money, but it's like a racehorse. So I know that you met some folks at Amman and you worked for them in the summer and then ended up living in Chicago, and you worked for some pretty good people. Just real quick, what did that mean to you, that experience, and what are the cooler things that you got to do when you were in Chicago?
You know, Chicago was fun. I went there initially to try and open a restaurant for the couple that I was working for in Wisconsin at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Quickly realized that I was in way over my head,
mm-hmm.
And so were they, and kind of bailed on that idea. So I just sort of ended up living in Chicago had an opportunity, you know, just went out and grabbed the first job I could find, and I was just cooking at a bistro, which, you know, at the time was kind of wasn't exactly what I wanted to be doing.
Sure.
Though later on in life, again, you know, it taught me a lot of lessons that I wouldn't have otherwise learned.
Yeah. Well, that the bistro you were working for, right? It was still a pretty decent chef, right?
No, not really.
No? Not at that point.
I shouldn't say that out loud.
Well, you didn't say the name of it yet, so.
No, I was working at just kind of a small bistro up in Galveston, and it was a chef at the time the owner was sort of a small town kind of hero.
Sure.
And was in the process of trying to open a really fine dining establishment in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And it really pissed me off because I always wanted to, you know, I tried to get involved in that project, and I was like, hey, you know, I'm kind of smart. I can help. And he was like, yeah, no, you don't know anything about it. Okay. And so I just ended up just cooking on the line there for a while.
Sure.
And through the chef de cuisine there, he set me up going to a property called the Green Zebra.
Right.
Which was a new property from sort of Chicago stars at the time, Sean McClain and his business partners. And they did an amazing job with this, and it's where, you know, I learned, when I look back, especially cooking, I learned a lot from you, but at the Green Zebra is really kind of where I got my style. It's where I really absolutely fell head over heels for the style of food that I still more or less practice.
Cool. And was Green Zebra like vegetarian?
It was vegetable-focused.
Vegetable-focused.
I mean, we had like, you know, out of maybe 35 dishes on the menu. I think there was one fish dish and one chicken dish.
Yeah. Well, I just remember reading about it when it first opened. You know, it was kind of cool and hip, and I think
place is absolutely amazing. And I've had the opportunity to go back a couple of times since, and it's every time I've gone, it's really been an amazing experience.
Yeah, nice name. Did they name that after a tomato?
I believe so. That was the thing back in those days.
At least they didn't call it Morels.
The chef has since left and is doing his own thing in Ohio now, and he's, I think, kind of killing it out there as well.
Yeah. Well, I think it's kind of neat that chefs are, you know, have left like the cities and they're going into places and that you wouldn't normally think they would go, and they're doing some really cool food because, you know, there's so many great farmers and you know, artisans out in the rural areas that they can use. So I think that's a cool thing. So you left. What happened when you left Chicago?
You know, I was really I had gotten an opportunity to be on the opening team at the Zebra, and that was an awesome experience. Learned a lot and was really having a good time, kind of enjoying the good life in Chicago for a while. And sort of unexpectedly, I got an opportunity to do something which I'd always wanted to do, which was work harvest in Germany.
Yeah. And
so
harvesting what?
Harvesting grapes in the Mosel.
Nice.
So, you know, I'd been trying for it for years. Every time I'd meet a German winemaker or somebody that might be able to help, I'd express interest, and they always kind of laughed at me. They're like, "Oh, you can't do it. You're not strong enough. You're not tough enough." You know, we use Polish guys that have been doing it for 25 years, and I finally met somebody at VinExpo that was willing to give me a chance.
Yeah. So that must have been cool. I mean, if you're going to tie in your sommelier, your love for sommelier with food, how does that experience? You know, when you're picking grapes in Europe. How did you turn that into the culinary side? What inspirations and things like that are kind of intertwined with that whole experience?
Well, ironically, picking grapes isn't as exciting as it sounds. And you're spent with a lot of time thinking about anything other than what you're actually doing. So there was definitely a lot of time for creative thought at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But before I moved to Germany, I was having a hard time getting a hold of the people that had told me I could come work for them, and eventually I through friends of friends I got an opportunity to go work in and do harvest in Italy before going to Germany.
Sure.
And as soon as I kind of signed on for that, the German property got back to me and invited me to do that. So I, in fact, did one after the other.
Yeah.
So I went to Italy first and did harvest there in the Valpolicella.
Right.
And then moved on up into the Mosel.
Wow.
So given that, it really gives a lot of... a lot of time for thinking, but also, you know, a lot of really cool experiences in seeing different places, and more importantly than that, having the opportunity to sort of live life within a culture. You know, it's one thing to visit these areas; it's another thing to sort of live the life with the workers there.
That's awesome. Yeah. So, Isabel just come home?
Yes.
Get here. Tell her hello.
I will.
So, so you work in those harvests, and then you ended up with kind of an amazing opportunity in Italy, right? You ended up somehow owning your own restaurant in Italy?
Yeah. You might have mentioned it once. I've never really done things the conventional way.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. It's just good things happen.
So it was kind of odd, especially for somebody in sort of my career path and choice. Before going to Italy, I really had no interest whatsoever in going to Italy. It wasn't really. I'd been once when I was 18, and it was kind of the last thing from interest to me at the time. But given the fact that I had gotten an opportunity to work in a winery there, I decided to take it. And once I got there, I really I fell in love, and I wanted to, that was definitely where I wanted to be.
Sure.
So before leaving for Germany, I kind of went out looking for jobs, and had a surprisingly, apparently, you still need to speak Italian to live in Italy. So I really had a challenging time finding a job, and there was a small little property that was quite well reputed called Relais La Maggiolca. And I took the opportunity to visit there and apply, and sort of spoke with the owner and kind of pitched why he should hire me, even though I don't speak Italian or really have any direct skills that he needs. And that was kind of the last thing, you know, I'd heard from him. And moved to Germany, and where I met Isabel.
Sure.
And we had... after harvest that year, we came back to the States, and she came with me and for Christmas, and I had just sort of randomly moved back without really anything happening or no real opportunities arising.
Sure.
When all of a sudden I got an email from this gentleman saying, hey, I'm buying a new property and a new restaurant, and I need to talk to you. And so... took a quick trip down, and turned out he was buying an inn across the street, which had a large restaurant in it, and
sure.
he wanted me to run or to operate the restaurant for him. So we went into partnership.
That's crazy. That just doesn't happen very often.
No, you know, every once in a while, when you need something, comes along.
True. True. So you operate a restaurant in, and what was the town? It was in Valpolicella?
It was in the Valpolicella. It was in a small town called Negrar.
Uh-huh. And there you were, operating a restaurant. So what kind of food did you serve in a restaurant in Italy, a young American guy? And Isabel was doing the front of the house?
Yeah, Isabel's working in a winery in Bartolino during the day, and at night she would come over and run the front of house. We had some snags with purchasing that building, so we kind of backed off a little bit and decided to open the restaurant in the current inn that he had.
Sure.
And so it was considerably smaller than originally intended. And I think that, from a lot of what I learned, especially previously at the Green Zebra, our food was kind of in line with what I learned there and what I'm doing now, and that is it was really, truly for me, it was kind of a cuisine of terroir. I often joked that it was sort of more regional Italian than any other restaurant in the area. And that was just really us working with only what was there.
Right.
Obviously out of our garden, out of our orchard, doing a lot of wild harvesting and spending a lot of time driving through the mountains and the hills, trying to find things.
Yeah.
So, all tasting menus, and just kind of a really
sure. How'd that go over? Did people come there and be like, "Who is this kid?"
It was mostly for hotel guests. I mean, it was a small little property. It was eight
sure.
rooms, so it was kind of a consistent eight tables.
Right.
And more or less, we had a lot of excitement from our guests for it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, because it probably tasted really good, huh? And they were in the Valpolicella, which is one of the most beautiful damn places in the world.
You know, most of the people in this little hotel were that part of the world tends to be largely German tourists and American tourists.
Yeah.
So Isabel being German and me being American, it was also a really good kind of cultural gap for people because it sort of meant that they kind of ended up having a kind of a tour guide that they could relate to.
Yeah, that's awesome. So you end up doing that, and then I know that, the owners had some problems and ended up, having to roll. So you ended up back in the U.S., and you land again on your feet at the Inn at Dos Brisas in Texas. And for those people who haven't heard of that, it's a beautiful little property in Texas. So you end up there really kind of as a manager, like a general manager and maitre d' and sommelier, not actually the chef, right?
Oh, well, that was sort of a strange situation. we moved back and actually ended up in Montana for a minute at another relay property out there. That just didn't end up being a proper fit for either the property or us, really.
Yeah, right.
We moved on and kind of hard up at that time, looking for really any gainful employment. Got a job opportunity down in Texas. Had never previously been to Texas. In fact, it was the only state I hadn't been to.
Right.
And that was kind of intentional. I really had no interest in driving and being in that state. Got an opportunity as a assistant innkeeper.
Right.
I absolutely don't like hotels. Certainly then, didn't like them even more.
You're at a hotel now.
I just thought about that.
That's what I like about you.
I'm linking this to my website, but this is probably a bad idea now. I've always despised hotels. I find them kind of gross, which is why I think I'm kind of good at them, is that I sort of see it from a non-traditional standpoint. The whole comforter thing sure. grosses me out in hotels, so I've always done things a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to fix those problems. But
so what you're saying is you went to the hotel school, but you hate hotels. No, it's not that. I know what you're saying. You don't hate hotels. You hate the normal mainstream hotel and what it means. It's like a restaurant guy saying, you know, oh, I love, you know, I'm not going to say the name of the restaurant either, but, you know, you're talking about some casual, you know, Ruby Tuesdays type places that, you know, for a passionate person may not be the right fit. So
yeah.
that way you're better for what you do at your hotels. That's probably what makes it stand out and different than other hotels.
Yeah, that's kind of what we hope for. So I went down there, and more just because I was willing to take anything at that point.
Yeah,
and,
sure.
And within, Jesus, I don't know, a month?
Yeah.
Within a month, I passed a few people and became general manager of this little property.
Sure.
And along with Isabel and our team there, we really kind of had a great couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
Had a really good run at success there for a little while.
Well, some of your success is one, you helped it become a Reliant Chateau property, right? And,
yep.
And then the restaurant got 5-star from Mobile.
Yep. Forbes now, but yeah, Mobile at the time.
And the thing about that, you know, listeners might not know or might know, there are not many 5-star restaurants in the whole United States. There's 5-star hotels that have restaurants, but 5-star restaurants are few and far between, and that is really one of the top accomplishments. Anyway,
yeah, that was cool,
and so I applaud you for that. And so now you're in you're at Milford.
Don't forget Relais Gourmand.
Oh yeah,
Grand Chef.
Yeah, let's not forget that the Relais Gourmand is a society within Relais and Chateau, which is all their top restaurants, and you know, you have to be rated and everything. So, well, you know, you should have that. You know, you're a 5-star. So I think those are some really great accomplishments. And so now here you are. You're in Pennsylvania, and not only are you the general manager, but you're the chef. Isabel is also, what is she? Is she a general manager also?
Yep, Isabel is actually, Isabel and I together are general managers.
Right. So here you guys, you have your chance to really put your own mark. What do you think you've brought to this hotel comparative to where it was when you first walked in?
Now I'm running through, of course, the potential people that could be listening to this.
well, not, and, yeah, don't say it was bad or anything, but I mean, what
I think I've brought, I think Isabel and I have brought a lot of sort of passion for what we're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I got a chance to stayed there over Christmas, and, it's a cool little place. It really is nice. You know, your food is phenomenal. You make your own bacon, which, you know, I love. And, you know, anybody who makes their own bacon is kind of cool. Your own charcuterie, you're doing, you know, hanging salumi and hams, dry cured hams and things like that. I think every young, you know, chef would like to do that. Define what, you know, you'd hope that people would get when they come there to eat.
What I hope that people would get when they come here, you don't mean like which dish, do you?
Not which dish, no.
What
their
what
feeling? What would their experience be like? What do you want them to think as they're walking out that door after they eat?
It depends on which restaurant, to be completely honest.
Sure.
You know, we have the two different restaurants. Our Delmonico room is all about tasting menus, and
right.
That's kind of where we really sort of shoot to set ourselves apart, mm-hmm. in terms of fine dining. In terms of sort of our cuisine de terroir that I spoke about earlier, that's really the focus there. We want people to experience things in ways that they've never had them before. We want to sort of evoke memories and evoke emotions and things like that.
Sure.
I think kind of what everybody's looking to do right now.
Yeah.
Beyond that, in the bar, our Bar Louie, which is a little bit more casual and it's all a la carte, you know, sort of something that we haven't really stated at this point, but I think is definitely a part of our hopes and about that, is that we can kind of set a standard for what a restaurant should be.
Right.
All of those fun things that we do that you just mentioned,
mm-hmm.
We don't want them to be to seem like they're all that special or all that rare. We want to sort of create an environment where that's just kind of standard. It's
yeah.
just sort of expected.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's fun that we make all of our own stuff, but, you know, we should.
Yeah, true.
You know, we should do these things.
You even make Scrapple, right?
Oh, yeah, we make a great Scrapple.
Man, Scrapple. I love Scrapple.
That was one of our sort of our first big projects here was Scrapple production.
Yeah, it's awesome. So,
and, you know, I mean, everybody these days is, you know, doing their own pig thing. I don't think anybody quite as extreme as you are, but, you know, I think everybody does
yeah.
it and everybody talks the talk, and, sure. and that's cool. But, you know, for us, it's...
Well, what do you yeah. think sets you apart differently from other chefs that are doing all of these things? You don't have to be conceited or anything. I'm just saying.
No,
what,
no, no.
You know, what sets you apart? I mean, what makes you different from other chefs that are doing farm to table and their own salumis and all of those?
I believe in it, and when it stops selling, I'll keep doing it. You know, I've been you know, the farm to table thing is a really hypersensitive area
sure.
for me.
I know,
because I'm so sick of it. I almost just want to use all this commercial stuff because I'm just tired of the hype and the talk about it. But no, I mean, it's just, it's been, from my time at the, that was one of the big things at the Green Zebra that was really, that absolutely blew me away during my time there was, you know, we get deliveries, and this was back before it was cool. This was back
right.
before people talked about that, you know, it was nearly 10 years ago now. And we, you know, we got deliveries.
That's not that long ago.
A small farmer. All the time, and
sure.
you know, so much so that we didn't have a big purveyor, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It was farm carrots that went into our stock. It wasn't, you know, we didn't have the special one, the special baby carrots for this dish, and then, you know, the carrots from Cisco that went into our stocks and soups.
Yeah, right.
It was, that was just, that was our a way of life for us.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that that's really important, you know.
Yeah.
It was what I was doing in Italy, and frankly, I mean, like a lot of us, kind of grew up with. I mean, I grew up
sure.
on a farm.
Well, it's a culture. You know, you're talking about Italy. You know, the culture has always been that way, and you know, I think that is probably a big influence on a lot of people. But and I understand why you feel a little bit the way you do, because it's been so overused by the press and everything. This farm to table, like it's a brand new thing and never done before. But you know, you think about a chef and people come and eat, and you know, the folks that you know, that said nice things about you recently, you know, there's a reason. And you know, that's what I'm trying to get at, what you know, what it is. How can you know, how can one chef actually be better than another chef? And you know, I think it's interesting for people, what is it that is that one thing? It's like if two people are running 100 meters, well, one's going to be faster than the other, but you put two chefs together, why is one of them more successful? Why does their food taste a little bit better? You know, what is it that they've done? You know, everybody's working hard. Speaking of working hard, how many hours do you think you're working a week right now?
That depends on what you consider work.
Well, you know, picking vegetables is work, you know, Chris.
Yeah.
You know,
I spend, right now, to be completely honest, I'm spending a lot of time studying.
Yeah.
I probably am spending 30 hours a week studying right now.
Wow.
And then I'm probably only, I mean, I'm not at the restaurant as much as I normally am. I'm probably only doing 50, 60 hours.
Yeah.
So...
Well,
normally I'd say...
Yeah, but you also have your general manager duties, right? You got to do some...
Yeah, which, you know, as you well know, most of that's... Right now we're just getting in, going into our high season.
Right.
And most of the general manager duties were done 6 months ago.
Yeah, so what...
And making
Chris,
sure
what
right
are you studying right now?
You know, last night I wrapped up all the DOCs and DOCGs of Italy. Right now I'm reviewing Germany, and tonight I hope to get to Australia.
So are you going to be testing for another round of sommelier, master sommelier? Is that what the deal is?
Yeah. I've had a good run at competition so far this year, and I sit my master's in a month, something like 21 days from now.
Wow. Well, I sure hope you do well with that. And
thank you, sir.
Look, if there's any other thing that people would listen to that you'd want them to know about you, what would it be? And I'm talking about, you know, you. What would it be? What would you want them to know? Now, I'm not talking about, like, if you died tomorrow, you know, how would you want the world to know you? Or maybe I am. But anyway, you know, that kind of thing. But, you know, there's, you know, you're a multifaceted, you like that? You're a multifaceted guy.
Yeah.
You know, and you really are. Look, so you're a chef, you're a general manager, you know, you're a farmer. You guys have a great farm there, right?
We do.
You know, I forgot to say that. I mean, it's not like most, you know, when I was doing Keswick and Fawcett's, we did a nice little garden, but it wasn't like farm type garden. It was a garden.
Yeah. You know, it kind of goes to what I was saying earlier. I absolutely love our farm garden, but, you know, I almost have no interest in talking about it anymore because I'm so sick of everybody talking about their farm now and their garden and their farm, blah, 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 blah.
It's good though. You know, most inns don't have it, you know.
I know, I'm supposed to tell people about it, but, you know.
I understand. So, look, hey, we're not going to talk about the garden or the farm anymore, but what do you want them to know about you?
Hmm.
Last thing. This is it. It's going out for eternity. It's the stumper question. The stumper question.
You know, I think for me the most important thing is, you know, I'm just going to change your question to what I want to tell.
Sure, there you go.
Instead of actually answering the question. And that is, you know, you talked about how long or how many hours a week I work. It's not how hard you work. It's how much you love what you do.
Yeah.
And that, you know, for me, you know, a lot of people hear the number, and just, you know, like for you and all of us, it's, you know, a lot of people hear the astronomical number of hours that we work, and they think, oh, my God, how do you do it? Well, yeah, because most of it's not work.
Yeah.
Some of the things that we have to do is, you know,
mm-hmm.
when your dishwasher doesn't show up, washing dishes sucks.
Yeah, true enough.
But, you know, when you're standing there with your team and doing what we love doing, it's not like work, you know,
yeah,
you're not
true.
Sitting at a desk thinking about how much you hate it. It's, this is what we all love. And for me, that's, you know, that's what we do, and it's why I'm doing it. And that's the most important thing is, you know, so much of this is kind of a crossover between life, you know.
Yeah.
When you work with wine, you know, which part is work and which part is play?
Yeah, true.
Which part of that tasting is fun and which part of it's hard?
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing, you know, cooking. You know, I think we're all at work when we're out dining, too.
Yeah, true.
You know, we're always thinking about how we could apply it or what we could do or how it, you know, how they did it and how we can use those techniques. So it's just, it's not so much work as it is just life.
True. It's life. It really is. Well, look, Chris.
Yes, chef.
I think that you know, people are going to enjoy listening to your story and what you've been up to and how passionate you are about the things you are. And I think people are going to hear a lot more about you. How important is it for you to be, or for you to hear that people like what you're doing? Is that important to you at all?
Yeah.
Do you care if people, you know, figure it out?
You know, it's kind of one of those 50-50 things. Half of you want... You know, when somebody complains, half of you wants to say, well, forget about them. Who cares?
Uh-huh.
You know, the other half is deeply hurt.
Yeah.
You know, half of you wants to say, you know what, I don't care what people think. This is my art, and I'm doing it, and I'll find people that like it.
Right.
And the other half just wants to hear that the table's happy or that, you know.
Yeah, sure.
The two people are smiling or they're having fun and they're loving it, you know. And that's why we do it.
Yeah.
You know.
To make people
it's
happy.
Both. It's, I know some of the things that I do tend to be a little bit hard for everyone to understand, and some of those things are just, those are me, and I'm going to.
Yeah, sure. Hey, speaking of those, one more thing. What do you have right now? What are you doing right now that might be hard for people to understand?
our menu, our 10-course menu, which is really more like 14, is almost entirely vegetables.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Which I think a lot of people don't get.
Yeah. Well,
I think they love each dish, but I think a part of them still is, you know.
Sure.
When does the real food come?
when am I getting a steak?
Yeah. You know, I mean, we have a duck dish at the end, and so.
Cool.
And I think the hardest thing for my cooks to get is I'm against refinement.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't want to use just the nicest piece. I want to figure out a way to use everything. And
right.
I don't like to peel vegetables because the skin's the important part. And, you know, all of those sort of weird things that I believe in. And, you know, looking for the marrow of the vegetable and that kind of stuff.
Nice. So where can they, where can folks find out about Hotel Faucher?
Depends on how you want to find it, but you know, a good way would be definitely the internet.
And
hotelfaucher.com.
Spell but, that you know, Faucher real quick.
F-A-U-C-H-E-R-E. Faucher.
There you go.
And you know, obviously the best way to find out about it would be a little trip to Milford.
There
not
you
too
go.
Far from New York, not far from Philly. So it's you know, those are a couple of ways. Relais and Chateau is obviously a great way to get to know not only our property but all of the Relais properties in our sort of family of mutual support. Yeah. And that's relaisandchateau.com or relaischateau.com rather, and that's RelaisChateau.com. I think. Uh-oh. Got lost on that one.
E-A-U-X?
E-A-U-X, yeah. That
E-A-U-X,
could be
yeah.
So, and
you, know,
you know,
you went to the Ivy League creator. School, but they didn't say you had to spell.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you're very creative. But, yeah, so I, you know, one more thing I told you this before, but I just recently had folks come to the barbecue exchange in Gordonsville, Virginia, and they were saying, oh, man, we had this great time, chef. We were at this little hotel in Pennsylvania called Hotel Faucher, and I was just like, you know, these people come, like, every Wednesday night to have barbecue. So it's not that far off, and they loved it, and they plan on going back. I think it was their 25th wedding anniversary, so.
Awesome.
Cool. Well, listen.
And, you know, that's what's good to hear.
Yeah, it is.
Now, it's really funny because we actually have a lot of a couple of tributes to you on the menu as well.
Uh-oh.
So,
his salty, oversalted foie gras torchon.
Yeah, that's definitely one of them. We're pretty good at that at this point. No, you know the pork rinds are barbecue exchange spice pork rinds. I don't know if you've you know, let out the secret to that.
No, I haven't. And you're the only person that has that recipe, so don't tell me.
It's on the internet now, Chef. So,
God, way to go. Why?
And we just put on a Craig's Carolina barbecue pork sandwich.
Nice.
So,
that's awesome. Well, look, I appreciate it, and I'm proud of you, and we look to hear a lot more about you. We're gonna be putting this on Sunday night, so it's Sunday. And anyway, I look forward to talking to you more. And folks, you've been listening to Chew the Fat with Chef Craig here in beautiful Charlottesville, Virginia. We've been talking to Chef Christopher Bates from Hotel Faucher, Milford, Pennsylvania. And now you know him, so get up there and check out his food. You'll be reading about him. You'll be seeing him on starchefs.com and other places. And that's it. It's Chef Craig. Oh, one more thing. to chewfat.net. Go to chewfat.net and sound out. Let us know what you thought about this podcast. And Chef Craig out.
You might have heard this before. I know I have. Because this song is called Alice's Restaurant. It's about Alice and the restaurant. But Alice's Restaurant was never the name of a restaurant. That was always just the name of this song. And I guess that, well, that's probably why I still call this song Alice's Restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. Walk right in, it's around the back, just a half a mile from the railroad track. And you can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. I wasn't gonna sing the song tonight, or this decade, but I realized sometime earlier this year that it had been 26 years since this come out as a movie, and it was 2 years before that that it came out as a record. And it was 2 years ago on the record, which means it was like 30 Thanksgivings ago. 30 years ago on Thanksgiving, when my friend and I decided to go up and visit Alice at the restaurant. But Alice didn't used to live in a restaurant. She used to live in the church nearby the restaurant, in the bell tower, with her husband Ray and Facha the dog. And living in the bell tower like that, they used to have a lot of room downstairs where the pews used to be. Seeing as how they took out all of the pews and having all that room, they decided that they didn't have to take out their garbage for a long time. We got up there, found the place was filled with garbage, and we decided it'd be a friendly gesture for us to take the garbage down to the town dump. So we took the half a ton of garbage, put it in the back of a red VW microbus, took shovels and rakes and implements of destruction and headed on toward the town dump. We got there, and there was a sign, a chain across the road, and the sign said, closed on Thanksgiving. We had never heard of a dump closed on Thanksgiving before. And so with tears in our eyes, we drove off into the sunset, looking for another place to put the garbage. We didn't find one till we come to a side road. And off of the side of the side road, there was a 15-foot cliff. And at the bottom of the cliff, there was another pile of garbage. We decided that one big pile would be better than two little ones. And rather than bring that one up, we decided to throw ours down. That's what we did. Drove back to the church, had a Thanksgiving dinner that couldn't be beat. Went to sleep and didn't get up until the next morning, when we got a phone call from Officer Obie. He said, kid, we found your name on an envelope at the bottom of a half a ton of garbage. Just wanted to know if you had any information about it. And I said, yes, sir, officer.